What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. We're back chatting preacher for you. It is season two, and my goodness, is the season getting good. Hang out with us, guys. We're going to chat about Pig, my actual favorite episode of the show so far. We'll see you in just one second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah.
Hello. Welcome back to Preacher.
We're back, guys. We are back. It's AfterBuzz TV. We're here to chat Preacher with you. And as I just said in the intro, man, did I like this episode. This is just a smile on my face.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited. Oh, yeah. Really excited. This has been, yeah, so this was season two. I think it's episode seven is what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to try to get the chat up right now, so if you want to join us, we will be there in a second.
Yes.
So, yes, feel free to talk to us about what you thought of this great pig-filled, a hairstar-filled episode.
So yes, guys, it's season two, episode seven. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. I've got a wonderful host of beautiful panelists who are sitting over here ready to chat about Preacher with me. We're going to start with Nate's a Duck. Just kidding. I know that's not your Twitter. I just like to throw it out there.
This guy's getting the hookup on this show. What's going on, guys? It's Nate Miller here. You can follow me on social media at Dog Like Nate.
Yep, and then we got Dave Child.
And I'm Dave Child. You can find me at mrdavechild or davechild.com. My name is Dave Child. Hi.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram and the things to chat about stuff. So this was a Hair Star episode. We got to like get a full like they made him like picture perfect from the comic book.
Agreed.
And oh, that's a reminder. We should always let everybody know. Guys, we will be vague about comic book stuff. Any spoilers during the show, even if we know, because we have all read the comics. And after the show, if there's any need for it, we'll do like a little brief spoiler discussion after we sign off, just in case you want to hear any of that stuff. But on the show, we will, you know, be vague about it. But nonetheless, I felt like the humor and the character and so much of what I loved about Hair Star.
Yeah.
And I was just saying this before
the
cameras were rolling. Was that I think in the Preacher story, in the comic book, like the thing that was so charming for me over the years, because I've read the full series probably five times, I'm thinking, four or five times. It was one of the earliest ones that I read, like a full 70-issue run. And the thing that always stuck with me was like, yes, it was a great dramatic story, and there's a lot of great dramatic stories, but the sense of humor in the series is what was so distinctive about it. And in the comic, I always felt that Hair Star was the humor. He was like the linchpin of the humor. He was the funniest part and the most, like, the weirdest laugh-out-loud part.
Well, he represents exactly what the sense of humor was, because it plays off of a satire on religion and has a dark sense of humor and violence, while also weird sexual undertones the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, very deadpan, very serious, but at the same time, very self-aware and like making fun of himself, just putting himself in such bizarre situations,
and the shrug his shoulders, like immediate frustration with like Christianity being the mission, but he's just like I'll use this like organization's power. But it's just like everything about it, like even all of the training games they were doing were like so lame. They were just like really, really outdated army practices, like run through these tires, and if you fall, you're off the list. And like it's just like that's what the Grail is.
I love that like the last guy that was left with him was the same guy that was like laughing at him when he asked about the validation.
Of course.
And he's like that picture perfect, you know, Mr. America with his hair, and he's all good looking and buff and. Not good enough.
Yeah, and you also saw him. You also saw him successfully seduce that woman.
Right.
But also, it's like, are you really testing how to seduce a woman? When it's just like, all right, next up, see if you're going to seduce her.
Exactly.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, that's the thing about the Grail that's so wonderful, and they captured just perfectly in this was that like it's that like. As the story goes, and you just get senses of it now, but like it's that sense of disappointment and embarrassment that Star seems to have at all times for like the cause that he's involved with and the organization that he's in. But it's also like this mega powerful organization that seems to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
And you know, as they said, they killed Abraham Lincoln and they, you know, they killed Belushi. Like they're the ones.
Belushi. I love that Belushi was like a rising prophet that they had to like cut down.
There was
just sad, but
there was also like so many like little pieces of humor in this episode, yeah, star and non-star related, that I just thought were so great. Like, I absolutely freaking love when the kid in Vietnam runs out and he's wearing an Atlanta Falcons 2017 Super Bowl champion shirt. Yeah. It's such a subtle dig, but so funny.
Yeah. And you also saw this episode about Star and the Grail. You kind of saw the reason why it took so long to make this show.
Yeah, right.
Why it's been years of people going, maybe we should make this show. We're going to anger some churches. So maybe not. And this, we've been talking about, like, you know, voice of God, having like, angels and demons and hell and all that stuff. But this stuff where they're making... basically the Vatican, like, army that's happening right now. That's why they were afraid to make the show.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad that they're going full force with it. And it's almost exactly like the comics.
They would have to. I can't see how you would make this without going full force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the chat. Ivan, do you think that it's Jim Belushi that they're talking about? Ron Belushi. I think it's the other Belushi. It's John Belushi, brother. But
that's fair.
I love the idea that they've just, it was Jim Belushi that they just kept bringing down.
Yeah, right.
In his credits. But now he's got Twin Peaks and he's doing well, so I might
actually... Oh, is he on Twin Peaks?
Yeah, he's great in Twin Peaks, too. Anyways.
So, the episode opens up with a flying pig. That's the title of the episode is Pig, and it's representing another strange false prophet for people to worship.
Yeah.
And Star has to go and murder it and all of the villagers. And this is his mission. So we now know by the end of the episode that Star is after Jesse, and that's he's ruthless.
Yeah, and we did see in a previous episode when we first meet Hair Star, we see the folders stacked up on his desk, and the very first one was Pig, and then the second one was Jesse Custer. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was a nice little subtle thing. I remember
noticing it, like, oh, that's got to mean something.
It's like the third or fourth episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and Pig was such a funny word to see at that point. So
yeah. So, that's pretty much what went on with Star. We're going to jump over now to a discussion a little bit about Tulip. And they're building, man. They're just still building and just turning the knife slightly.
Yeah.
We open up in the Hurt Locker, the aforementioned bar where you get shot in the chest to, like, win money, I guess.
Yeah.
And...
it's a classic game.
Sounds awesome.
New Orleans.
It's a classic New Orleans game.
We should all go.
Uh-huh.
To New Orleans and go to the Hurt Locker.
It'd be a fun bonding experience.
So she's setting it up like it's a joke, and Cass is her boyfriend, and, like, the whole, even though she's joking, it's like you can see the look on his face, and then the kiss happens.
Yeah.
And
kiss lasts a bit too long.
Yeah, right. Kiss lasts a bit too long.
His hands wander a bit too much.
Jesse sees it. So they are really dropping that hint, and they're really just pushing it every episode a little bit. Now, here's my question. Do you think that there's any part of Tulip that likes Cassidy in that way, or do you think it's the fact that she's just not getting the attention she wants and the right kind of attention from Jesse?
Well, I think she's starting to head down a very self-destructive path right now. And I'm curious about where it's coming from, but, you know, she did just have this odd encounter with her ex-husband, who she met after Jesse, and also she was touched by the saint.
Yeah.
And that seems to be having some lingering effects, some lingering abilities. So that might be something, and I think that path of self-destruction might be heading her towards Cass's direction. That might be what's happening.
And they seem to drop some hints about that maybe tonight on the episode when Cass has that line about everybody dies hating me.
Right.
Right? So it's like, I feel like they keep just dropping that hook a little deeper, and get a bigger fish with it.
And I do like how they're keeping the saint in the game because of how he touched Tulip, and it seems like that's going to be something that's coming back.
It's nice to be able to. There's like a somewhat finality to that story, at least that little plot point. We don't have to feel the constant urgency of them constantly chasing them wherever they go. So it's nice that we have that, but at the same time, because of the haunting and stuff like that, he's still very much present in the show, even though he's not actively pursuing them. Yeah. We're not going to forget about him anytime soon,
right? Do you guys think, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and again, so we'll be sort of vague about it, but the storyline I mentioned when she was having her dream, and she, like, opens the door and goes to check the light, and she comes back in, and the saint's there, and it's the double dream, it's the double fake-out.
Yeah.
Was there any part of you guys that thought, like, somebody was going to break in and, like, take them? Because, like, I was, like, leaning towards it.
I don't know, maybe for that I kind of read it as like a dream sequence.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because of the next week on last week.
Sure.
That I saw that they were gonna bring the image of the saint holding her right in the kitchen, which is always a problem with those next week ons.
I didn't watch last week.
Yeah, I mean I think that's
saved me.
Beneficial. But there is that dream within a dream that kind of happened, and that was the one moment. I think that was the one drag moment of the episode.
Yeah, I feel like the dream within a dream just a little too long.
Well, there's something very specific about like the dream, the dream flash wake up in any kind of in any media, movie, TV, whatever. That's like does get a bit tired. Like it's something we've all seen. It's like an old trick you can use, mm-hmm. but it's like just very often just doesn't feel like it holds the weight necessary. And when you go dream within a dream, it's like, all right, we've now spent like 4 to 5 minutes of this episode
right.
on stuff that hasn't happened, which yeah. is all just imagining yeah. this.
For me, the most terrifying part would be just still being in that house. I feel like that's probably
right.
the first step to mm-hmm. getting away from having the nightmares, because then if you wake up in the house, then you know you're dreaming. You know, if you're in True. The same place as you're going to have your nightmare, that's when you have that ability. You lose the ability to discern whether right. you're awake or not.
So now the part of the story that I was suggesting I thought might have happened there. Do you guys think it's possible we don't see that part of the story? And this is vague for comic book readers. We'll explain later if you'd like. That we don't see that until much later. Like, I was imagining it would happen early because of that's chronologically that's how it happens. But do you think it's possible we don't see that till much later in the story?
I think it's going to come a little bit later.
Yeah.
I think it's going to come later. I think we're living in the world of the Grail right now, and I think it's going to be there for a little bit.
It seems like they're going down that road, because yeah. that happens before the Grail, I'm pretty sure, in the
book. Yeah, in the books, and they're shifting stuff around. And
yeah, they're moving stuff
around. Kind of like where they're going with the Grail.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm excited about that. So yeah, but they set this game up, and Tulip kisses Cass for a little too long, and Cass takes a bullet. And then there's a conversation between Jesse and Preacher, Jesse is Preacher, Tulip and Jesse, and it's about, like, they're not getting along, and they kind of flirt, and there's a joke for a second, but, like, there's definite tension. There's a big tension. He's ignoring her. It seems she's in a different place. They're not on the same page.
You mean Jess and Tulip?
Jess and Tulip. Did I just say it wrong again?
I don't know. Like, well, it was hard. I was getting distracted by people in the chat. But I think, it's hard to tell where they are, because I kind of like how they kind of chatted and flirted.
Right.
And there was that kind of nice moment of repeating back and forth.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I kind of felt like that was a nice little touchstone. They're still good moment. I think she's just going through something with that whole, whether it's post-traumatic or whether it's supernatural. I think that's where I want to.
That's how I took it, is like it was really tense at first, and I was like, oh, here we go, they're gonna get into it again. But then it was almost nice of that. It's almost like, you know, when you really care about someone, you can still be mad, but you still care about that person, and them kind of joking and being able to laugh it off. But it definitely feels this, especially when you're talking about like her being in another place, like she was like trashed, which I'm sure has to do something with her, you know, feeling uneasy, unsafe, whatever,
right.
self-destructive as she is now because of her having these nightmares and, you know, wanting to feel alive. And Jesse's just not in the same place right now. So for him, looking at her, especially with how distant he's kind of been, it's probably hard for him to, like, relate and open up and be, you know, what she's looking for.
Well, then, and he says to her, I'm going to go try to talk to, you know, find a guy who talked to God or whatever. You want to come? Of course you don't, you know.
Right.
That was the moment that I was like, yeah, there's definitely some distance here. They're really not, they're not good right now, and that's driving her towards Cass, who apparently Cass's son is dying, Dennis.
Yeah,
that's sad.
Yeah, and they're bringing up something that I know a lot of people in the chat previously have brought up, the question of, like, you know, what is a vampire, especially in this, can the vampire turn? And now it sounds like Dennis wants to be turned himself, and we're seeing Cass be very resistant against that.
Do we know, like, again, I think we can specifically reference that in the comic book, we never see Cassidy turn someone, right? I think that's a fair thing to reference.
No.
That's not true?
It's not true.
Okay, so we'll save, that discussion we can save for the end. Yeah. For some reason, that's what I was remembering. It doesn't feel like the vampire rules are the same, though. Doesn't feel like the vampire rules are the same. Like, it could, can
let's,
Cass...
Let's save that for the end, I think.
Well, because I'm confused about it, I think we can just discuss what we think on the show.
Well, I think right now what they're definitely implying with the show is that, and they could change it from how it is in the comics, but what they're implying in the show is I think he can, and he's resistant against it.
With the way that he reacts and how he vehemently is like, no, no way. Yes. Like, it's not, it doesn't come off in a way of like, no, that's, sorry, that doesn't happen. That's not how it really works. It's like a, I've done this before. I've seen what it does to people. I'm not going to, even though you're dying.
You know, right, it just seemed as like, that's something I will not do rather than that's something
but that's and that's why I'm also curious, because... And, you know, that may or may not tell us a lot about vampires in this world, because I kind of took that as like, you know, if at this point he turns him into a vampire, he's just going to be a, you know, 70-year-old half dead vampire anyways. He's
still a good looking guy.
I don't know if in this world he's going to revert to being like younger and healthier because now he's a vampire and that'll fix his problems, or if he's just going to go on immortality as just like this old man already.
My guess, and this is just a guess, is that he won't get younger,
because it seems like, because judging from Cassidy, it seems like you're stuck whenever
you're stuck at that age. He'll get healthier.
His heart, his heart will heal. The degenerative heart disease. Yeah.
I think all of his diseases will heal, but he'll still stay the same age. Right. He just won't get younger, which is like, you know, he's just still an all right looking.
I feel like that would help you a lot too as a vampire, because you already look old, so you just kind of always look old as opposed to always looking young, which is kind of suspicious.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see that. Like the stuff we mentioned last week about all of the history we're going to get as the show goes, that like they did what I hoped they would do with one of the history pieces, the star stuff, where they were just like, we're going to like give you basically almost a panel for panel kind of thing. And
and especially with this episode, one of the things that we've been talking about is how this season they're making episodes about something. Every episode is about something.
Right.
At least the A story is being continued and has an arc. And the A story in this one was Air Star's story.
Right.
I think that was most of the episode, was the flashbacks. And that was nice to see. It was a nice little... And the B's and C's stories, the smaller stories, were Tulip, Cassidy, and Jesse.
Jesse
and what they were, yeah, what they were going on. And I love that. I love that they took, like, the backstory and made that the focus of the episode.
Yeah. I think it's great that they gave him that great setup and introduction, so that now that we know he's coming after Jesse, like, we kind of know the kind of man he is and what, you know, he will do.
Yeah.
Which I think I'm hoping though that he still has kind of a hands off approach, and that he's still, you know, the one giving the orders, at least for now. He's not getting his hands dirty, and we see the agents and stuff getting involved. And then later on, we, you know, as hopefully like what happens in the comic, then we get him to see a little bit more involved, because that's how I really enjoy him as a character. Because often in comics they'll have these big mega secret organizations, whatever, and the leader kind of is just like the embodiment of the organization person.
Right.
You know, like Hydra, for example.
Right.
And like Red Skull. But I always enjoyed that the Grail, like Hairstar is not the Grail, he just is part of the Grail. Mm-hmm. And even more so, especially later on, it's like more of just a tool for him in the power and stuff. I just find that dynamic so much more interesting. It makes the character himself like stand apart.
Yeah, I do kind of want to talk more about that in later, spoiler country, because I was a little confused about that. Like, where does he stand in this compared to where he is in comics? I'm sure we have the same question.
Yeah, we'll definitely let's definitely save that one, because I think that's the big spoiler discussion we want to have, is how true to source material and like what we saw in the episode. Because I did feel like his attitude, even from the beginning, was a little different than I was expecting from the character.
Uh-huh.
He was a little too forward with his information. So, we'll see. But we end the episode with with what I think was supposed to be Stephen Hawking.
Oh, is that what it was?
I was under the impression that you had basically Stephen Hawking sitting in a chair talking to a reporter about what the hell happened with the dead pig. And he was the one who, and he's working for the Grail because he's like, they're like influence people on TV and all this stuff, and they have like dirt on everyone. That's what I got. That's, I mean, the only person that I can think of.
That might be true. I read it as like it was an informant.
Okay.
It was some sort of robot disguised voice informant. But you might be right.
Yeah,
I think
that
it
makes
was supposed
a lot more sense.
Because he says, are you a scientist? Right?
Yeah. I think that's right.
That makes, coming from the Seth Rogen world, that makes a lot of sense.
And it's supposed to be Stephen Hawking
mumbo-jumbo
working for the Grail, explaining that the water made a meat balloon.
Right. That's actually really good. My problem was I just listened to a whole Radiolab episode where they're talking about creating people's voices.
Yeah.
And they sound kind of like that. So I thought it was like just because I just, I thought it was like them creating someone's voice in order to sound like that. But yeah, all right.
I was pretty...
I think it's Stephen Hawking.
I was pretty pleased. It felt that felt like a very...
They're not even talking about the show in the chat. Let's focus on that.
That's where we get the ending. So Star was able to poison the water and kill everyone and also murder the pig and move on to his next target.
That was great, too, how they played that out of him like drinking the water and, and then going, oh,
perfect. This is how I'll do it.
Yeah.
The water tastes bad. I can use that.
There's stuff in the water. Now I'm just going to kill everyone and blame it on the water.
Right. And I also just like, and I just, I keep harping on Star because it just made me so happy. I mean, you guys have watched a bunch of the episodes with me. I feel like that's the first time that I was just like laughing out loud, gleefully, like fist pumping all episode.
Yeah.
I like this show a lot, but this was like another level for me.
Yeah. I mean, the Hair Star sequence was just so good. And even having already seen the clip, I was worried after I saw that clip because it was so long. I was like, man, this was so good. I feel like I spoiled what like was what's the gonna clip? Be
it was the Comic-Con
clip. It was the clip was him in the competition. It was like basically from the lineup point to the last part where he shoots the guy.
Yeah. Oh, it's that whole thing.
Yeah. And I was like, jeez. Oh man, this is so good, but this has to be like one of the best parts of the episode that I've already seen now.
Yeah.
But there was still so much more that I hadn't seen already that was just fantastic.
Well, because I also thought for a second there that like they played on the humor that I remember so well, where he like eats the like noodles or sauerkraut or whatever he was eating, and he goes to take like a sip of water, and he looks at it for a second. I was like, "Is he drinking urine?" Because I was like, for a second, I was like, "That would be such a Star thing to like get himself into accidentally and be so dissatisfied with what's happening."
Yeah, I'll wait for spoilers to talk about the other thing that I thought about in that scene.
But I do like one thing that is that's a little different from the comic books is his nipple rings. I thought were really great because it fit the character in the comics, but it's definitely like different from where we see him when we first meet him.
I think it's just a way for them to kind of tread ease down into, that path, without
and bring that weird kind of sexual undertones that comes with him.
Because the way they do it in the comic probably wouldn't translate very well, just direct.
Yeah.
So finishing the Tulip storyline before we talk about Jesse here, the only other stuff that we got that was really important with Tulip was aside from ending up back at the Hurt Locker at the end of the episode, she does have a conversation with Jesse where she says, "You were almost too late. If not for Cass saving me," and it's another one. They're just continuing to build that tension and turn that knife a little bit. And
there is a sense of like Jesse has to start paying more attention to the family, kind of.
I can't tell if they're trying to make the audience think, does Tulip like Cassidy a little bit? Is she conflicted?
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's just more of her being hurt. And they already had some distance between them, especially now with the Saint thing. And she is almost, it seems like she's having like an existential crisis.
I think she, as we literally see at the end of the episode, she wants to get shot in the chest. And I think she wants to feel that pain.
She wants to feel alive. She wants to confront the thing that she's scared of. Because she's not that person to, like, hide.
Yeah, and I think she wants to feel that emotionally, too. Which is why she's messing with their relationship. And she's bringing up these questions and bringing doubt and kissing Cassidy for too long. I think all of that is her kind of playing with that pain that she's feeling.
Just I think like, her and Cassidy is just going to be like a manifestation of the lack of Jesse's attention, of her like crying out for help, and Jesse's just preoccupied with everything else that's going on, and Cassidy being Cassidy and, you know, caring about Tulip and paying attention is just going to happen to be there. It's just like a wrong place, right time thing.
Right.
And I think that's how it's going to go down, because I really don't, as I even from the beginning, I don't think that she sees him in that way. I don't think naturally.
Hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, she ends up back at the Hurt Locker at the end of the episode, and she's going full on, you know, walking in Deer Hunter. She's just taking bullet to the chest.
I thought she was just gonna like start a big brawl and fight everyone or something.
I don't know what was gonna happen. I was just like, what's she trying to get herself into here?
Like, also, like the guy takes his hat off and shows condolences and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I ran a bar where I shot people in the chest or whatever, and then one time I miss and I shoot a guy and I think he's dead, I feel like that would rock me a little bit.
I feel like I would leave town. I feel like that would be like...
Would you go to the bar after that? Like, oh yeah, I heard he killed a guy last week accidentally.
No, no one showed up.
You're up next, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they'd go back.
I guess.
I mean, in the preacher world?
Yes.
Because they're stupid. Because everyone's stupid
in the same world where there's two trucks picking up people on the street.
Dead people and drunk people.
Which I've hung out at New Orleans. Taser. That doesn't exist. But it was nice to see.
It's a new thing. It's a new program.
Drunk and dead carts.
Yeah, it happens in the middle of Girl Trip too. While they're dancing down Bourbon Street, you see the drunk carts and the dead carts. Middle of Girl Trip. Anyway,
Did you watch Girl Trip?
I watched Girl Trip. It was pretty good.
The new one just came out.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I haven't seen it, but I heard it's really good.
It is good.
Who's in it again? Jada Pinkett.
And we don't have to focus on Girl's Trip because we're talking about Preacher.
Yeah.
Which is where Preacher takes place.
We can talk about Girl's Trip currently. But we won't. It's my decision to not talk about it.
Sure. That's right, Ben. You make the choices.
So aside from that, though, the last storyline is Jesse. And we don't really get a lot of Jesse this episode, really. He reacts a little bit to Tulip. We've detailed a lot of his interactions and his reactions to what was going on there. And finally, he goes to talk to this crazy, you know, homeless hype man preacher character who is
Doomsayer.
Doomsayer, that's what it's called.
The end is nigh guy.
Yeah, and he's preaching about the end of the world. And Jesse ends up having a real conversation with the guy, buying him a beer.
Yeah.
And has a whole conversation. I felt like I didn't really quite understand the value of that part of the episode. People want to talk about Girls Trip?
No, forget about Girls Trip, everyone.
I kind of was trying to understand the value of that part of the episode. Like, what did you guys think?
Oh, I think he's looking for God and he's not finding it, but he is realizing that there might be more to the fact that God's missing than just the fact that he's being neglectful. That there are signs of the apocalypse maybe starting to happen. And he's kind of thinking out loud to this guy, and they're talking about it. And he's also concerned about his own soul, and I felt like he needed to find someone to confess to and discuss his spiritual problems to, instead of going to another preacher. He basically went to another preacher, but it's the end is nigh guy on the street rather than someone in a church.
I think it's also important to note, too, that we find out that he lied to Tulip.
Yes.
Saint of Killers, because she was under the impression that
he sent him back to hell. Got it.
And he didn't say, you know,
right.
He kind of like in a roundabout way neglectfully lies about it. So that's definitely gonna come back at some point.
Yeah.
And so that's got to be weighing on him also. Of, you know, obviously he was already scared at some point about it because that's why he didn't send him. So I don't know. I'm really interested to see how that plays out. It was a very Jesse light episode, but after last week, I feel like it was good. And it's always good to get, you know, some more development to see kind of after we got that big episode and his actions and how it all played out, which we mostly saw from his perspective.
Yeah.
That's why it was really nice when they had that moment and she was like, look, I'm alive, but
you almost did
make it. And I would have died if Cassidy didn't, you know, get his fingers chopped off. So it's interesting to kind of get somewhat of a reality check, at least from our perspective, because I feel it still goes in one ear and out Jesse's other ear.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a breather episode when it comes to, because you have Tulip trying to figure out, get over the touch of the saint. You have Cass trying to figure out how he's going to save his son and if he's going to turn his son. I think there's going to be even more discussion of that next week. And then you have Jess looking for God still, but also coming to terms with the fact that he lost 1% of his soul. And I think you needed to have a breather moment where they're just contemplating that. But it was still a good episode because on top of that, we get to meet Airstar and have some time with him and actually get to know this character. That's going to be playing a big part of this whole series.
I think it's interesting, and I noticed this also with Riverdale, but both of them coming from like a general source material whose title is a character, like Archie Comics, Preacher. Like they're both stories that you basically follow the exploits of this one main character and then a bunch and like a gaggle of ensemble characters around them.
That's a fun word to use.
A gaggle. In both cases, I really feel like the shows haven't really been about the title character. Like, I feel like Jesse is a character in the story, but I actually think it's kind of Jesse, Tulip, and Cassidy's story. They each have their own story. I don't really feel like Jesse's necessarily...
I think they're still building towards that.
Really?
They're still developing Jesse as a more complex character. I think part of what this, you know, relationship struggle eventually will bring about in him is a change in the way that he sees things perspectively. And then obviously there's some more plot points from the comic books that we think will lead to that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you very much so from this point. It's very much the three of them.
Yeah.
But I think they're working this episode in particular, I think, is laying the groundwork for future Jesse to be like, all right, now I see, I didn't see what was going on before, but now, you know, because of X, Y, and Z,
right,
now I'm going to go a different direction or whatever. I think that's where we're going.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that pretty much wraps us up on the show. Do you guys want to get into predictions and spoiler discussion?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
TV predictions.
I think somebody's working the booth or something.
Well, I think next week we're going to get a lot of cast really trying to figure out. I think my guess is that he's going to turn Dennis. Even though he doesn't want to, I feel like, for one, that the guy who plays Dennis is a pretty heavy hitter French actor to have. And he's just kind of been a goofy character until now. So it would be nice to see him kind of take this role that he can't be controlled because he turns into a vampire. This is not comic book stuff because Dennis isn't in the comic books at all.
No.
So I think they might explore that kind of turning him and seeing what happens.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to turn him, but at least I'm hoping that we're going to get some more vampire lore, and I think maybe Dennis is either going to try to find a different vampire or something in New Orleans or something along those lines, some
type of
vampire community or something.
That could be fun.
Maybe he does turn him and like it attracts the vampire hunters that we saw in season 1. I think it's more than just
the vampire hunters. I totally forgot about.
I think this is going to lead us into the vampire ethos of Cassidy.
Right.
I think it's more than just the two of them. But I think more likely he's not going to do it to Dennis, and somehow Dennis is going to find some connection or something. Some guys and be like, "Oh, I can hook you up" or something like that.
I think we're about ready to get to New Orleans. I think this next episode will be our last in New Orleans. I think it's going to be the exit. I think.
How many more episodes are in the season?
13, right? And I think this is 7, so we still have a half dozen.
I mean, maybe, because I think we're going to also be getting more into the Grail. We're going to meet those side characters,
Masada.
Those two other characters that are part of the Grail, and Airstar is now going to focus his attention on Jesse Custer, so I think he's going to be coming to New Orleans.
I can't wait to see them on the screen together.
Hoover and Featherstone?
Yeah,
me too. Yeah. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up our general discussion. We're going to give you a quick sign-out, and then we... Yeah, Sleepy Bateman. I know, I yawned a lot. Sorry, guys. and then we are going to do a quick little spoiler discussion for those of you that want to stick around for it. If you guys want to follow along with me, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram. You can find me on Wednesdays at 12:30 on the Popcorn Talk Network, chatting about the best action movies in the world. We've got Atomic Blonde coming up this week.
Yeah, and you can find me at mrdavechild or davechild.com. I'm also on the Game of Thrones podcast, so you can see me or listen to me there. My name's Dave Child.
Who are you?
Guys, I'm Nate Miller again. You can find me on social media at Dog Like Nate. I also host a gaming show here. We do every Mondays at 6, and then I'm also on the Ballers After Show on Sundays. It's always a fun time.
Yeah, cool. That's sweet. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, now we're going to spoiler country. So, if you don't want to hear about the comics,
spoiler alert.
Leave the room.
You guys have 10 seconds. Oh, somebody says Bateman. Season will be only New Orleans. Sorry. Yeah,
so there you go.
I was wrong. My prediction was worthless. But this is the spoiler section, so you won't know that unless you stuck around.
One thing I do want to say, I don't think we did learn this episode that the Grail is following the lineage of Jesus. I don't think we should talk about the lineage of Jesus. I think that's something we should save for what we know for when they reveal it.
Yes,
that.
I think so too.
But one thing, my big question that I think we were hinting at before is Air Star the All Father right now?
Yeah, that's my question.
Because that's very unclear, because in the comics, there's an All Father, at least at first, who is his boss, who's a lot like the guy who recruits him, except he's giant, fills a room, looks like a cardinal, and is extraordinarily fat. I'm wondering if we're going to get that character or if they're going to skip that character altogether And Aerostar is now just the All-Father. And
I hope they don't skip that character because he's a great character.
Well, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the separation of Aerostar and the Grail.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm hoping that it's that way, because I don't want him to just be the leader and be the face and all that stuff. I like the character much better when he's just a super effective agent of the who's high ranking, but not.
And it's fun when it takes him a long time to get to that position, and he's constantly afraid of being killed. Like, I think that's one of the most entertaining parts of his character.
That is interesting.
The intricacies of the organization itself.
Because it has to feel like it's all powerful, and the part that's so great about Aerostar and what I love so much about him is that at the beginning, he's like this agent who's like hyper focused, and it's only as the story develops that he becomes like effectively like less and less competent because of what's happening around him.
And then it's too wild.
Then he controls the Grail, and he has this like bloodlust to kill Jesse, and it becomes his all consuming. Right. And it's so comical.
That's why I want it to be. That's why I want it to be that way, because I think it's important for the character for that switch to happen.
Yeah.
For that takeover.
Where he's just he's just like, I don't care about any of this shit.
Yeah.
But it is confusing right now because he just pushed that guy off of the cliff who seemed to be his superior. Yeah. And you get the sense that he just took his job right away.
Yeah.
And that was a little like, how does that work? If it is an all-powerful organization,
how does that happen?
How are they going to let that go?
Unless that was the final test.
If Preacher is hyper successful show in the end, and I don't know what the ratings have been, I haven't been paying attention. Mm. This is the clear Better Call Saul. Like, it's an easy, it's a layup in my opinion. Like, it's you make the story of everything that you got like from him training, and then all of his exploits with the Grail prior to this happening is like an entertaining enough story for me.
Right, you just focus on the Aerostar.
Yeah, easy.
Show. I guess that would be kind of too brutal.
Yeah,
I think he's a good villain. I don't think he's a good protagonist.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that show would be really.
It would be Lone Gunman. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So you were referencing before that you think perhaps they're gonna do the vampire group that's in New Orleans.
Les Enfants du Sang.
I think this may be their way of. In some way incorporating them. Yeah, because they're in New Orleans already. It's a great storyline. They're French.
Yeah.
You know, he's French.
There's the two vampire storylines also, by the way. There's the full Les Enfants du Sang group, which is a funny story, and they're great. And then there's the other time, the Cassidy one-off. I think it's Cassidy Blood and Whiskey is what it's called. And it's where he goes and he finds that one vampire. Do you guys know that about?
Right.
Is that the one he meets with like every?
No, he goes standard. And finds him, and he's like sleeps in a coffin.
It gets confusing.
He like sleeps in a coffin and wears all like the vampire clothes. And Cassidy's like, "Why do you do all that shit?"
Yeah. That's who I thought I remember him turning. I think he actually turned him in the comics. So that's why I was like,
he doesn't. That's why I was saying he never turns anyone in the comic. That guy in the end, that guy is killing someone, and he looks at Cassidy and he's like, "I always take too much." He kills him in the end.
Right, okay.
He meets him, and he's just another vampire.
Right,
so Cassidy never turns anyone, as far as I remember.
Okay.
It was implied that he is the one who turned...
Turned that guy. That's what I thought.
I thought that... But I'd have to go back and look at it.
I have to reread it myself, but that's who I was thinking of when I was
that it was like, "Hey, buddy, just checking up on you now that you're a vampire.
Now, are you okay? Oh, no, you're a monster. I turned you into a monster.
You're doing this wrong."
That's what I thought that there was.
So. Oh, interesting. I didn't think so.
That's how I got it.
But anyway, I think that pretty much does it, right? We pretty much wrapped up on spoiler talk.
I think so. Victor Ortega's asking, do they have Jesus or his son? We're not going to tell you yet because we feel like that's something that
from what he said, it's it's the lineage.
The lineage is definitely
Jesus
there.
Jesus had a kid, and then the kid had a kid, and the kid had a kid, and that's what the Grail is.
They're not lying about that lineage. Yes. We can at least say that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Cool.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking in. We'll see you same time, same place next week. We have about a half dozen episodes left this season. I'm really pleased with where things are going, and I appreciate you guys checking back every single week to watch us chat. Preacher, thanks, guys. See you same time, same place.
Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network.
To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.